Jambo, fellow adventurers, this is Mike Dooley, and you are listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
So I always start the show by saying how excited I am, but I am so excited because one of my favorite people in the whole world is on the show. And Jack, I just want to welcome you.
Thank you, David. My pleasure to be with you.
You know, Jack, I often, you know, you and I spend time together and we have such a great time together. But I often think back to how you started and sort of to your childhood and, you know, and sort of the roads or the crossroads that you hit and the choices you made to lead to where you are today. As you gaze back, are there moments that you look back on and say, wow, that was one of those moments that really sort of led to this pathway or led to this result you're getting today?
Well, you know, yes, and there are many, and I think that there are several that are key. And I think the key to my success has been to always follow my heart and say yes, and even when it was inconvenient. But probably the main couple of things, one's kind of funny. I was going to school, and I got appointments to Annapolis and West Point, and I decided not to go. I ended up going to Harvard and studying Chinese history and got into psychology in my senior year there, and that was a huge right decision for me because it opened me up to a new world from Wheeling, West Virginia, where it was very provincial, to a world where I was meeting people with last names like Rockefeller, Max Factor III, John Hopkins IV, people like that, and people from all over the world. On my college dorm freshman floor, there was a guy who was the son of the Communist Party president of Italy, you know, that kind of thing. So it really just opened up a lot of awareness to me about diversity in the world. The second thing was when I was in graduate school, I was doing my laundry in a laundromat, and this guy said, put your book down and talk to me. I said, okay. And we started talking, and it turns out he was a doctorate in economics student, and he was going to this series called the Living Philosopher Series. And some of the people presenting that series were people like Alan Watts, who was the first popularizer of Zen Buddhism in America, and then a guy named Herbert Otto, who was my first time in going with my friend Frank to see him. And he was the director of the National Center for the Exploration of Human Potential. And he said we were only using 10% of our brain. And I went, whoa, you know, 90% unused. Let's go talk to this guy, find out what I can learn. And as a result of that, he turned me on to the W. Clement and Jesse B. Stone Foundation in Chicago, which is where I was at the time. And I went down there and started taking weekend workshops and things like encounter groups, Feldenkrais body work, Gestalt therapy, you know, Rolfing, things like this. And I think I spent like 17 weekends, you know, in the next couple of months, just every opportunity to take a workshop. I was like a sponge. I was hungry. I had never learned that I had emotions, that I could dream. You know, I just was kind of on a path that my parents had set for me, totally liberated me. And that was critical. And then I think the next thing was when I decided to work for W. Clement Stone's foundation. And I started running trainings all around the world. And I was working with a man who was he was one of the closest friends of Napoleon Hill, who wrote Think and Grow Rich. And so I got exposed to all of this stuff that later turned into The Secret, things like the law of attraction and positive thinking and goal setting and affirmations and visualization. So here I was in my, you know, late 20s, and I was already exposed to all this. I'm 68 now, so that was over 40 years ago. And probably the final two big decisions were I went back to graduate school and I started a growth center, a retreat center. People are familiar with Esalen Institute or Omega Institute, where I had 11 acres of land and a lot of bunk beds in this large. And we started doing seminars and retreat centers. And I did everything from meditation. And I mean, we used to do groups in nude, you know, whatever, constantly expressing, stretching our human potential further and further and further. And then probably the last big major decision for me was to leave all that. You know, it was always like just as something was working, I'd get this inner guidance. I was supposed to do something else. And the last one was, I was I took a training, and it was a large group training called Insight. And there were like 400 people in it, you know, like Landmark and those things. And it totally rocked my boat. And I went, wow, you can impact hundreds of people at a time in a room instead of just a few. I mean, you've worked like with Harv Eker and, you know, worked with thousands, and so have I. And so that decision to quit sell my center, move to California, didn't know anybody, and hopefully get a job at Insight, which I eventually did, and to start doing large group trainings. And then it took me, you know, literally into the work I do now, where, you know, working with 1,000, 2,000 people at a time. I just gave a speech with it included all kinds of experiential exercises for a day in Moscow for 3,000 people. And that's what I love to do.
You know, Jack, I love this. And as I'm listening to you talk about all these different sort of twists and turns of this journey, you've said a couple of times, you know, you talk about the inner guidance, and you said, I always say yes and follow the heart. Mm-hmm. I want to start there just because, you know, for you, that makes sense. And for me, it makes sense. But people, how do you explain that? I mean, someone's sitting at home right now and, you know, their life feels crappy, or they don't have what they want. They're in a job they hate. And you say, well, just follow your heart. How does someone wake up from this sort of overthinking and their mind completely full and start listening to that heart? What's that process like?
Well, you first have to believe that makes sense. And, you know, I think there's enough evidence out there now with, you know, my life, your life, thousands of people's lives, if not hundreds of thousands, all the books and, you know, movie stars and rock stars that went for it, you know, were told you'd never make it and so forth, that you have to first decide, what is it I truly want? And often that starts with, what don't I want? I'm sick and tired of this job or this relationship or this profession or this way of being in the world or being overweight or unhealthy or unhappy, whatever it might be, and say, okay, so what floats my boat? When do I light up? When do I get excited? For example, we were just doing a workshop a few days ago, and there was a woman in there who was talking about work she does with grieving and letting go of the past. And what she really got in touch with was how she, when she was talking about helping women find their soulmates, all of a sudden she lit up in a way that I hadn't seen her lit up all day. And I went, that's what you're supposed to be doing. Don't do what you think you ought to do. Do what lights you up. Do what brings you joy. So if you believe, and there's a lot of evidence now that proves this is so, that you have an internal guidance system, just like a GPS system in your car, and that GPS system, all I have to do is put in what I want, you know, the address I want to get to, you know, like a certain address in Phoenix, Arizona. I live in Santa Barbara. It'll tell me how to get there. All I have to do is drive to the next turn. I don't even know where that turn is going to be. And all of a sudden the car says, take a left onto the 101 South or the 10 East or whatever. So if I trust that joy, that happiness, that aliveness, that excitement that gives me juice is what I should be doing, then if I trust that and I start moving in that direction, what we find is it's not always an unrocky path. You know, when I moved to California, I didn't make a lot of money the first year, but the result of doing that led to my career now and all the people I've met and all the things I do, which wouldn't have happened if I'd stayed in Massachusetts. But it's that sense of knowing that I can trust me. So most of us have been talked out of trusting ourselves. You know, we go to the doctor and they say, you're going to get a shot. You go, oh, it's going to hurt. And the doctor says, no, it's not going to hurt. And then you get the shot, and sure enough, it hurt. So, am I crazy? You know. And so what happens is we're talked out of the courses we want to take in college because it doesn't lead to a high-paying job or whatever. You know, our parents tell us we shouldn't date that kind of boy or whatever. And so little by little, we learn not to trust our feelings, not to trust our intuition, not to trust our gut. And I think the mind is a beautiful thing, and we need our rational mind. But our rational mind will usually talk us into a cul-de-sac when it comes to what our passions and our desires are. And so I'm a big believer in following your passion, following your bliss, following your heart. So for someone sitting on a couch listening to this, it's saying, okay, what don't I like? What would be the opposite of that? And when you think about it, does it get you excited? Does it make you feel good? You know, I teach people to do a joy review of your life. Go back to the times when you felt the greatest joy. And, you know, sometimes people go all the way back to high school and they find out, well, I was in a leadership position, or I was playing sports, or I was involved with, you know, animals, whatever it might have been. And then look all the way through your life, the greatest times you had joy, and ask, what was the common denominator? Was it freedom? Was it teaching? Was it being responsible for other people? Was it making a difference in the world? Did it have to do with music? Whatever it might be, then start leaning into those things. If you love to cook, maybe you could start a catering business. Maybe you need to open a restaurant. Maybe you need to just work as a chef for someone or work in somebody's home as a cook. But find the things that turn you on and then ask yourself, how can I make a living doing that?
So when you started out, you're sitting in this laundromat, some guy thrust a book in your hand or says, hey, you know, talk to me, whatever, right? And for me, I was going to say, the same thing happened. Some guy thrust Think and Grow Rich in my hand, and it started me this whole journey of transformation. At that point, how was your life? Was it something where were you living your bliss already, or were you kind of, where were you at when you had that moment?
Well, I was a graduate student in the second year of what was called a Master of Arts in Teaching program at the University of Chicago. I was teaching in an all-black inner-city high school. I was enjoying working with kids. I was not that much enjoying teaching history. Quite frankly, very early on, I became much more interested in why they weren't motivated to learn. Well, I was always curious about everything. They weren't. And what I began to discover as I looked into it was they had low self-esteem. They didn't believe they could learn. They didn't believe they could be successful. So I was kind of in that place where I was frustrated, not quite knowing what to do to help them, but knowing that what I was doing wasn't helping them. And so when I went to this lecture with Herbert Otto, and I started taking classes at the W. Clement and Jesse B. Stone Foundation at OASIS, what I discovered was all these wonderful techniques for building self-esteem, building self-confidence, motivating kids to achieve more, what we called achievement motivation, the stuff that Napoleon Hill was into and so forth. And I started teaching that in my classrooms. You know, I might have a 50-minute class and maybe 20 minutes of it would be this kind of stuff and 30 minutes would be history. And my students started loving it. I would have students on probation or, you know, they were like kicked out of school. They'd sneak in, come to my class and sneak out of school again because they didn't want to miss my class. I never reported them because I wanted them to learn. The point was that it was so exciting for me. So all of a sudden, I discovered the aspect of teaching that was going to be my career, which was motivation, self-esteem building, empowerment training, and so forth. But yeah, I wasn't miserable, but I wasn't super happy. I was also single. I was living in a $79 a month apartment. And imagine this, $79 a month. They had a Murphy bed that came out of the wall, you know, those beds that come down.
Yeah.
And you had to bring the bed down to get to the clothes closet, which was behind it. Refrigerator, kind of like you'd see in a camper. And bathroom and a table and a light hanging out of the ceiling like you see in all those bad movies about people that are broke. And that was it. And a couple of years later, I was making $100,000 a year and teaching teachers all over the country this kind of stuff. So it led from being, you know, I'd probably still be a high school teacher somewhere today. Not that that's a bad thing, but it wouldn't be nearly the impact or nearly the excitement that I experience now.
You know, I know that in a few weeks or a few months from now, you're going to be with the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi and 250 of his closest friends at this incredible gig where you're flown over there to come and do your work. You know, I think you got a 114. How many books do you have published? Is it 214? 114 is.
There's about 225 Chicken Soup for the Soul books, and I've done about 15 or 20 other books, you know, like that I've written as opposed to edited. And so we're up near 250.
So about 250 books. You're surrounded by some of the most amazing people. You're known as America's leading success coach. So when we look at your life, and I've been in your home, you have you just have a gorgeous, gorgeous feeling in your home. I mean, it just feels like the most welcoming and open, and it feels like it's an extension of your soul. It's just an incredible family. And your wife is over the top. And so here you are. You've done it, and you continue to do it. But that guy that you've just spoken to, or that lady you've just spoken to, who's sitting on the couch right now, and you've said, okay, now first of all, you're going to listen to that inner guidance and you're going to start leaning in. What are some of the other steps? I know your book, Success Principles, is one of these masterpieces and it sort of holds all the keys, but what are some of the steps next? I mean, what do we do next to get to what we want to do in our life?
Well, first decide what it is you want. We call it creating a vision. And, you know, even before that, you should determine, and you can do it with my book, there's lots of other techniques, what your life purpose is. I believe everyone has a purpose. And if you know what your purpose is, then you can set your goals in alignment with your purpose. You know, someone once said, you don't want to get to the top of the ladder and find out the ladder's leaning against the wrong wall, meaning you're successful, you're making a lot of money, but you're not happy and you didn't do what you came here to do. It's kind of like you've been given a mission to go and deliver a pizza to somebody, and halfway there you end up in a bar, you're having a lot of fun, but you didn't complete your mission. So at the end of your life, you're not going to feel fulfilled. It wasn't what you were supposed to do. And I believe each of us has a contribution that we're supposed to make to humanity, whether it's through music, architecture, being a coach, being a teacher, you know, being a house painter. There's something we're supposed to do that when we do it, we feel joy. That's the guidance system saying you're on track because you're happy. So if we each did that, everything in the world would need to, you know, that we need would happen. So once you've determined that, then there's some simple ways to do it. Then you ask yourself, okay, what would it look like if my life were perfect? And I tell people to look into seven areas of their life. Financially, how much money would you like to make? How much money would you like to have at retirement? What cash flow would you like to have, et cetera? Secondly, relationships. What would that look like? Thirdly, career. You know, what would be your favorite thing? If you could do anything at all and make a living at it, what would it be? Fourthly, we want to look at fun and recreation. Most people don't take enough time off. They don't enjoy themselves. You know, I just finished a week's vacation in Florence, Italy. I'm going to Bali for 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks of December, before I fly to Abu Dhabi. So the idea here is fun and recreation. Build it in. Most people, it's leftover time. You know, if we're lucky, maybe we'll get a little time. We also want to look at health and fitness. You know, what does your ideal body look like in terms of energy, amount of sleep you get, health, resiliency, flexibility, strength, longevity? All of those issues are critical. And we want to look at what I call personal, which are what possessions do you want to own? What kind of clothes? What kind of car? What kind of house? And lastly, contribution. You know, what difference do you want to make in the world? You know, I belong to a lot of organizations, you know, we could call them philanthropic, where I either give money or time or a management support to try to change the problems that I see in the world, to create the kind of political systems, the kind of, you know, ending poverty, a world that works for everybody. So everybody has some vision. And we just say, imagine a genie comes down and tells you can have anything you want. What would it be? Now I have a picture. You can't get to where you want to go if you haven't decided where there is. If you call a travel agent and you say, I'd like to go on a vacation, they're going to ask you some questions. Where would you like to go? When would you like to go there? How long do you want to stay? And how much money do you want to spend? If you don't know the answers to those, they'll try to help you figure it out. But until you get that resolved, you can't get on the road and start moving toward this thing we call vacation. The same is true in life. Most people live their life in reaction to things rather than intentionally. And somewhere in my 20s, I realized I can create my life the way I want it. Now, here's the deal, person sitting on the couch. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, I've had some clients that, you know, doubled their income in a year or two and things like that. But generally, if you're sitting there and your life's kind of in the pits, you know, it's going to take you 2, 3, 4, 5 years to get to where you want to go. Some of my goals are 5, 10, 15, 20 year goals. But the point is, if you don't start moving in the direction of them, and with all the tools that are available, you're never going to get there. And then once you've decided where there is, then you can make it measurable. That's why goal setting is so important. How much by when? Big house on the ocean, nice idea. But what is big? Is it 4,000 square feet, 5,000 square feet? What ocean? Pacific, Caribbean, Atlantic, Indian Ocean? Where do we want to go? So you've got to get specific, because until the brain knows exactly what it is you want, it doesn't know what to do to create it. So it's a combination of responding to the way things are in the world, finding the things that turn you on, but also driving your car. You know, you're going to swerve out of the way of things that are obstacles. You're going to move in the direction you want to go. Sometimes there's roadblocks. Sometimes there's detours. But you keep going west if you want to get from California from New York. And eventually, if you keep doing the things that move you west, you're going to get there. And the same is true with goal setting. And then you can add in all kinds of things like affirmations, visualization, mastermind groups, accountability partners. We can break that down if you want, that are tools that will accelerate, just like, you know, you can push faster on the gas to get from where you are to where you want to go. But basically, it's deciding where you want to go, believing you can do it, surrounding yourself with positive, like-minded people. That's why groups and calls like yours and, you know, blog posts and podcasts, etc. You keep your mind focused on the possibilities.
So, Jack, you know, you talk about people, and that's something, as you were going through all that, and I'm, you know, I'm thinking about all the people I've interviewed, and, you know, that have gone this rags to riches route, or just living their bliss, or living purposefully, which most, everyone has on this show. But this idea about surrounding yourself with the right people, how important is that? And if someone's right now sitting on that couch, and there's a lot of negative influences around, and maybe they're even married to one of them, what do you do? How do you navigate that one in your car and swerve around that one and get through that obstacle?
Well, you have to, I think Robert Schuller, the great minister, once said, if you want to catch a moose, you got to go where moose are. So if you want to shoot a moose, you're going to have to go north, like to Alaska or northern part of Michigan or Maine or whatever. So basically, how do you find positive, goal-oriented people? Well, you look at the kind of places they go. They go to workshops. They belong to professional associations. They belong to civic organizations like the Kiwanis and the Elks and the Lions Clubs and the Chamber of Commerce. In other words, they're committed to being around other people who are committed to the same things they are. Success, commercial success, whatever. Probably if you're in a profession, there's a professional association. You know, get involved. Find people that are already successful. You know, you can start a support group of like-minded people in your community. You could put up a bulletin at church. You could put up a bulletin on Craigslist. You could, put a posting on Facebook. You know, I live in Boston. I'm committed to success. I'm reading Jack Canfield's book, or I'm working with David Wood, and this is what I want to do. Are there other people out there? Here's my email address, or here's how you can leave a chat on the Facebook thing. And therefore, connect up. You know, you've got to put out the request. A lot of people say, well, I don't know how to meet a man. I say, well, go where men are. where do they play? They go to sporting events. They hang out in bars. If you don't want to marry an alcoholic, maybe meeting a man in the bar is the wrong place, you know? But the point is, if you want to meet spiritual people, go to church, go to yoga classes, go to New Thought churches, go to spiritual retreats. When the guru's in town, go there, you know? But it's a matter of getting out of your apartment, out of your house, and getting with the people who are making things happen. And one of the great ways, David, is to volunteer. My experience is organizations, whether it's the local heart association, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, you know, those kind of things, the people that volunteer are the people that are usually the most successful and the people that have something to give back. And you start getting around those people, those are often the people that are the successful people in your community. I met one of my great colleagues at American Heart Association. Just went to a fundraiser, and there he was. We started talking. We become long-term friends because we're both in the community trying to help.
That's awesome. And I asked that other part of the question, though. If they're around a lot of negative people, what's your suggestion around that? I mean, how do you navigate that one?
Well, two things. You know, limit as much time as you can to that. I mean, it is a choice about where you put your body. Unless you're in jail, the military, or school, you have choice over where you put your body every day. And if you're around a lot of negative people, you might want to reconsider that. You know, do you have to eat lunch with them? Could you go off on your own? If you're at a family reunion, find the people that aren't negative. I stopped going to some family reunions, a long time ago when a lot of my relatives were alcoholic and negative. And I thought, what am I doing here? This is ridiculous. And if you're in a work situation where there's negative people, you can basically say to people, I'm just not engaging in those kind of conversations. You can ignore them. You cannot let their negativity affect you. One of the things I teach people is to surround yourself with a positive energy field. It's as simple as literally imagining yourself being surrounded by an eggshell of white light or golden light, or you can imagine a spotlight coming out of the heavens protecting you. And so as people are saying all that negative stuff, you can just simply say, cancel, cancel. I remember when I used to tell my kids stuff they didn't want to hear, they just took their hand, they just kind of move it over the top of their head, kind of like, bounces right off the head, next. Listen. And so we have that choice, and a lot of people belong to what I call an ain't it awful clubs. They go out with everyone drinking after work and everyone complains about how bad it is at work. And almost every profession has their ain't it awful club bar. The policemen go to one bar, the firemen go to another one, the lawyers go to another one, the civic workers go to another one, and they bitch and moan and complain. And bitching, moaning, and complaining has never solved anything. You'd be much better off going home, reading a book, meditating, doing some yoga, going to the gym and working out and getting, you know, yourself where you want to go rather than sitting around complaining about how bad it is.
Now, Jack, you know, on this journey of yours, it sounds easy. And I know that you've, you know, mastered these things, but obviously you've hit some roadblocks. You've had some real challenges. As you look back over the journey, what were some of the things you had to face that you really had to dig deep, or you really had to, you know, engage these principles? Were there anything really major that really almost shook your foundation?
Sure. You know, just, you know, kind of spending less time with my family was a real challenge. You know, I got a lot of pressure about why aren't you coming home for Christmas? Got to a place where when my mom was an alcoholic for a number of years, I just didn't take her phone calls. That was painful. But the fact is, they didn't help her and they didn't help me. And another big one was my first marriage was a disaster. I never should have married the person. Very negative. I kind of realized it about a month before the wedding, but my self-esteem was so low at the time, I couldn't imagine telling 250 people don't come after we sent out all the invitations. That cost me 5 years of my life, and I finally went, no, I can't do this anymore. I'm out of here. That was painful and hard. I had two divorces. One marriage lasted 5 years, one lasted 20. Second one was a very good marriage for a long time, but it died, and we just went in different directions. But again, it was very difficult in terms of here I am, a professional figure. Everybody thinks my life should be perfect, you know, because I'm successful. And I have to go, no, my marriage isn't working. I look back and I think, you know, I demonstrated to myself and my students that, in fact, you can get out of bad situations. But, you know, you hate to stand up and say you're a success coach and you're on your third marriage. But each of those divorces was something that was difficult but necessary to do. My first company went bankrupt. It was a training company in Massachusetts when I was in my mid-30s. And we didn't know what we were doing on the business end. We did great trainings. We did wonderful counseling and all of that, coaching. But we didn't know enough about business to make it work. And so we had to shut down with $20,000 in debt. I eventually went back and paid all that off. I don't believe in bankruptcy where you just, you know, screw everybody, although sometimes that is required for a person to rebuild their life. But that was a difficult time. Firing people, that's never easy for me. And yet I've had to do that in order to move on, keep our companies growing. And, you know, had tough times with kids. My oldest son was a heroin addict. You know, I mentioned I got divorced after 5 years, and he was two at the time. And he grew up with my ex-wife, who, you know, was not the perfect mom, and nor was I the perfect father. But she was tough, and now he's in a single parent home, and he got into drugs and alcohol, and slipped into a heroin addiction. Got out of it. It's been sober for about 10 years now. Wrote a book about it. But if you've never seen an adult son who's in their 20s. Strung out on heroin, taking them into rehab after rehab for about 2 years. That's one of the most painful things you'll ever deal with. And I had to go through that. So, you know, we've all had our slings and arrows to bear, but they've all been growth experiences. I'll say that. I've learned something from every one of those. I had to develop a quality and express it or step into my strength or learn a lesson about, you know, humility, whatever it was. I don't believe we're given anything to deal with that we're not meant to learn something from that will strengthen us in the long run.
Yeah, that's great sharing. I mean, it's wonderful what you shared, and I again, as I think of those people sitting on couches right now, and many of them stuck in circumstances and sort of identifying with your story, I ask myself that question. You've helped hundreds of thousands, and if not millions, directly and indirectly, it's got to be millions with your books out there and everything you do and the amount of people you train. Well, and people, they want it. They start, they lean in, they start doing some of these things, and then they sort of, they fall off, or they don't keep moving. They stop, and they don't get to what they want. They don't find that place of bliss. What's one of the most common things you see why people don't arrive at that place of bliss? What pulls most people off this path?
Well, about four things that I'm aware of. Number one is habits. Habits are very difficult to change. And they're getting easier. We have more technology now with NLP and emotional freedom technique, EFT, things like that, tapping. But if you don't address your habits and understand they are difficult to change and understand the process for changing them, there's a lot of technology. Just for example, if you want to add a new habit, we know, like, let's say exercise or reading or meditation or yoga. If you do it first thing in the morning, Because a lot of times we say, well, I'll do that when I get home from work. Well, then work extends, boss asks you to stay later, you're tired, guys ask you out for a drink, whatever. You never get to it. So starting a habit early in the morning, declaring to everybody that you're going to change this habit. You're going to stop smoking, you're going to exercise, you're going to, you know, return phone calls within 24 hours, whatever. So that when people see you not doing it, you've got some, you know, social pressure, if you will, to support you in doing the thing that you say you want to do. Having a mastermind partner. This is why, you know, AA works. You've got a sponsor. You're about to drink. You call up your sponsor. Hopefully they talk you out of it. You've got a support group. So mastermind groups. People don't build in support. And so I always say, you know, you've proven up till now that on your own, you can't handle this area of your life. It's like having a broken bone. You've proven your left leg cannot support you because it's broken. So what do? You put a cast on it to strengthen it until it's strong enough to stand on its own. So what is a cast we can put around a habit area? It might be a 12-step program. It might be a coach. It might be a mentor. It might be an accountability partner that you talk to on the phone every day and say, hey, David, just calling in. Here's the 5 things I committed to do today. What are the 5 things you committed to do? We talk tomorrow. I tell you what I did or didn't do. Just knowing I've got to tell you every day what I did or didn't do makes it more likely I'm going to do it because I don't like calling up and saying I didn't do it. Having your spouse enrolled is an important thing. A lot of people, you know, they want to lose weight, but their spouse is out there buying Dunkin' Donuts and bringing them home. So you want to get the sugar and the et cetera out of your pantry. It's hard to do if the rest of the family is not supporting you. So there's that whole habit thing is a big deal. Not having the support groups that you need. And the other thing is keeping your mind straight. And again, there are many techniques, meditation, but reading is important. You know, when I was on a weight loss program, I would read something every day about weight loss. I bought 5 or 6 books. There was one called The Fat Is in Your Head. I bought one, you know, Fit After 50. And every day I'd read a chapter just to keep my head aligned with my intention. And the other big piece that we found is really useful that people don't do a lot is scorekeeping, meaning that weighing yourself every day, keeping track of your calories or keeping track of how many reps you did if you're doing weightlifting or how many sales calls you made if your goal has to do with, you know, increasing your sales. Somewhere you can actually see accountable rather than just, you know, in your head, which is very unreliable.
That's awesome. And so Jack, when we've got these things now, we realize these habits, we're leaning in, we're moving forward, we've got this visualization of our life, we've answered these questions. This whole idea of action, taking sort of action and sort of noticing when it's not working. Obviously you've talked about that, you know, you're in the car, you've set the GPS and going around these obstacles. Can you talk a little bit about action? What kind of action, if someone wants it, if they want it more quickly, what are they really got to do? If they want to change their life in the next 12 months or 2 years or 3 years, and they're really serious about it, what have they got to do?
Well, action is required. You know, the last 6 letters in the word satisfaction are A-C-T-I-O-N. The last 6 letters in the word law of attraction are A-C-T-I-O-N. So there's some built-in clues. And basically, the word satisfaction, Latin, satis means enough, and facere, which means to make, like manufacturing or a factory is where you make things. So enough making, enough action produces satisfaction. So basically, the faster you can get into action, and I like what Tony Robbins says, massive action, do something really big that really, you know, tells your body we're changing things. Like if you go skydiving or mountain climbing or scuba diving or firewalking, these are the things that Tony does to kind of shock the system into a new place of, wow, I didn't know I could do that, but I took action. Look what I did. And so it kind of retools the whole inner framework. I was on a coaching program once with a guy named Jim Bunch, who you and I know, and he, it was a phone call course, and he'd asked me what I wanted to do. I said, I wanted to get into shape. He said, great, put down the phone and give me 10 push-ups. And I said, Jim, I'm talking about like joining a health club or getting a trainer, or a kickboxing class. He says, I know. The key word there was talking about. He said, hang up the phone or put the phone down and give me 10 push-ups. I must have resisted him for like 2 minutes. But I didn't think that was what it was about. I said, Jack, it's about starting now. Get into action. I want to have 10 push-ups. He wouldn't look at 16 people on the call and he wouldn't go on until I did it. So I did it. And literally the next day I started doing push-ups, and now I do about, I can do about 81 in a row right now. My goal is to do 100. But the point being that we've got to get into action. And sometimes, you know, you want to make the smartest action possible, but we don't always know what the best action is. So do something and get feedback. You know, if I take a gun and I shoot at a target, then I have a little, you know, binoculars I can see that I, was I right of the bullseye, left of the bullseye, above it or in it or whatever. And then I can adjust my aim based on, you know, what I went too far right or left. Often what happens for most people, as you know, is they're waiting for the perfect condition. They're waiting for the weather to be right. The, you know, they, until they get their doctorate degree, until their kid graduates, until, you know, I remember once this couple saying, the therapist said, well, why aren't you guys divorced? Your children are dead. You know, I mean, it's just, that's the kind of stupid stuff people do. I used to say people are waiting for like 12 doves to fly over their house in a house. They'll tell them that's the auspicious day to get started. But the trick is start now. I was at a party recently and a woman was standing in front of me with a plate of chocolate cake. And she says, God, I want to lose weight. You're a success coach. What should I do? I said, put the cake down.
So Jack, you know, your Success Principles book is kind of the Bible of all these things. And really, you spent a whole lifetime sort of getting that book and practicing, utilizing these principles and working with masters. And obviously, you know, you started off the show by really talking about your investment in self, all of these programs you went to. And you still, I mean, I watch you when we're at events together. I mean, you sit there with your pen and you're constantly in this learning state. How would someone utilize your book? What's the best way to take that book and use it as a map to success?
Well, there's two ways to do it. One is to sit down with the book and read it straight through. Just familiarize yourself with the principles. Now, it's a long book. There's 64 principles, several hundred pages. It's not something you're going to read overnight. Although I did get a letter recently from a kid who was 15 years old who said, my mom bought your book. My mom never reads books. I'm totally amazed that she would buy a book. So I sat up and I read it for three nights in a row. Said, before I read your book, I was getting D's and F's in school. I was smoking dope and drinking alcohol, ditching classes, getting in trouble. Now I'm getting A's and B's, not smoking and drinking anymore. And thank you for your book. So I know it can be read in a short period of time and have a kind of an impact approach. But once you've done that, what I recommend people do is find a partner. In fact, I just did a whole call today. We do this Ask Jack call every month. We were talking about what blocks people from success and applying these principles. And one woman wrote in that she and her husband were reading a chapter a week. And then they were discussing the chapter. And then they, for the week after they read it, they would read it like in a day. Then they would discuss it. Then for the whole week, they would try to live that principle. And then the next week, they would read another principle. So if you do that, it takes you about a year to get through the book, but you'll really embody it. The other thing you can do is there's about 25 of the 64 principles are really critical, what we call the basics, like blocking and tackling in football. So you get in there, you can clarify your purpose in an evening. You can clarify your vision in another hour's process. You start setting goals. You write affirmations for your goals. You start visualizing every day for, you know, maybe 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes before you go to bed. You start making a list of all the obvious actions that you would need to take. If you don't know what actions you need to take, find people that have already done what you want to do. Ask them how they did it. Read their book. Take their seminar. Have them mentor you. You know, join their club, whatever. And then do the things they tell you to do. Because there are roadmaps for losing weight, for investing in real estate, et cetera. And then keep on keeping on and respond to feedback. As you said, not every action works. But if it's not working, then do something different. And then persevere. Don't give up. So if you just do those things, and you could probably within 2 or 3, 4 weeks of serious study, you could be well on your road to success. We promise people that if you read the book and you apply what's in it, within 2 to 3 years, you can double your income and double your time off, have more fun, more joy, and more time with your family. We have people do that all the time, double, triple, quadruple their income. Doesn't matter where you start, making $5,000 a year, $100,000 a year, $300,000 a year. We had a yoga teacher who was making $50,000 a year. She came, read the book, did a little bit of coaching with us, And 1 year later, her monthly income was her yearly income, meaning she was making $50,000 a month instead of $50,000 a year. She exceeded $500,000 as a yoga teacher.
That's awesome. And Jack, you know, we're getting close to the end of the call, and I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of how you are able to duplicate what you do. And you have this real passion about training trainers and teaching teachers and around these principles, because the principles work. And so I know that you have, I believe in April, you're having your next Train the Trainer event. Do you want to chat to me a little bit about that and share a little bit about that?
Well, the Train the Trainer program actually starts in February. It's a three-week course. There's a week in February, a week in June, a week in October, and it's limited to 100 people. Currently, as we record this, have about 58 people signed up. We have about 100 people in a queue for interviews, but don't let that stop you. We really want the most qualified people. And qualified doesn't mean you have to be a trainer, a speaker, a coach, a professor, any of that. We're looking for people who are passionate about making a difference in the lives of others and who want to teach people how to apply these success principles that are in my book, The Success Principles, into their life, into their profession, into their teaching at school, whatever it might be. So at the end of the first week, people are qualified and trained to be able to deliver a half-day seminar and workshop with experiential exercises and activities. By the end of the second week, you can do a one-day workshop. And by the end of the third week, you're able to do a two-day workshop filled with your own personal stories of how these principles have helped you. You've got probably about 100 different activities that you can teach people that you've experienced that you can use to embody these principles. So it's learning by doing, not learning by listening to someone talk like on this call. And you know, we have people from all over the world, usually about 40 different countries participating. And the coolest thing, David, is I now have students who've become my friends all over the world. I go to India, I end up staying in people's homes. I go to, you know, Croatia, I'm in someone's home. I go to Fiji, I'm in someone's house. I could probably travel for free for the next 5 years, which is fun. And I won't have to sleep on a roof to do it. As I'm sure some of your students have heard you did when you were younger. The point is that people can learn literally how to teach this, and then they can add it to their repertoire. They can start running seminars. They can add it to their coaching program. People have left normal jobs and made a career of this. Other people have integrated it into their work.
Awesome. And if someone wanted to get involved with the Train the Trainer program, how do they do that?
We CanfieldTrainTheTrainer.com. So C-A-N is in Nelly, F-I-E-L-D, TrainTheTrainer.com. And or they can just go to jackcanfield.com and scroll down to events, and it'll be listed there. And then they can download an application form, and you send that in, you schedule an interview, and then you can ask any questions you have about it. You can talk to some of our other graduates who have already done the program. And if you and you get interviewed about, you know, what it is you want to do, and hopefully if you want to do it, you'll get in.
Awesome. And then you and I share a little project that we're both passionate about, and you're doing your first event down on a private island in Belize. Do you want to chat a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, you decided you wanted to own an island in Belize, and I decided I wanted to co-own a little part of it with you. So we've got this island, Thatch Cay, down in Belize near Dendrigo, and we're going to be doing some we call them luxury retreats. We limit them to 20 people. We've been doing them in Maui for a number of years, and now we're going to be doing them in Belize as well as a couple other places around the world. We're scheduling one for Dubai, actually, in October. And they're limited to 20 people. And in the mornings, we teach information, and we do seminar. We do all these activities we talked about. People get in touch with their passions, their purpose, their goals, their vision. And then in the afternoons, we do mastermind groups where each person gets to be the focus for about a half an hour while the rest of the group we break into a couple different groups, about six people in each group, and they get focus on their goals and get input and feedback from all the other people about how they can be more successful. Just yesterday, I was working with a woman who took one of our groups in Maui, who was a therapist. She went back. She closed down her small office, hired two other therapists to work for her. She started doing a book, which is almost finished. She's done five magazine articles. She became an expert after the shootings in Colorado and did five TV commercials, not commercials, but interviews. And she's doubled her income and is working less.
That's awesome. And if someone wants to get onto the luxury retreat, how do they do that, Jack?
Again, go to the website, jackcanfield.com, and just scroll down. You'll see a training for Belize. It's called, I forget exactly what it's called, but you'll see the dates are April. May 2nd. Yeah, it's in May 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
5. Yeah. And that'll do it. And then you just apply.
Awesome. You know, and all I can say is that hanging out with you is just a blast. But you know, when you're hanging out and learning and then still having the fun as well, and that's what I love about the way you teach is that, you know, there's the practical lessons, but then there's that real relationship you build with your students where you talk about them as real friends. And that's what, I mean, we both have that same passion. Before I let you go, Jack, and I want to ask you a question. What's a kick-ass life?
What's what?
The show's called The Kick-Ass Life. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you?
Oh, to me, it means having the life of your dreams. It means doing stuff that's really fun. It means having a ball. It means making a difference. It means making a lot of money. It means, you know, having great friends. You know, the word kick-ass to me means you're just doing exactly what you want to do. And so I think you're helping people realize it's possible and they deserve it. And with the tools that you teach and other people teach the interview, they can create it.
Awesome. Well, listen, Jack, thanks for being on the show. We'll have you back, and I'm looking forward to hanging out and swinging a hammock with you.
Okay. My pleasure, David. You take care, my friend.
All right.
That was kick-ass.